It's Wednesday, so that means we talk agriculture with the experts from Branson. I can't think of a better expert to talk to right now, given the situation we're in, than their technical agronomist, Ed Corrigan. And Ed, first of all, thank you, and always for giving us a few minutes. Last week, we could go tomorrow, you had the plot day up at the research farm. I was interested in your presentation. I'll begin with that, talking about maybe, I guess, have we kind of forgotten how important potassium is to growing a good corn crop?
We really have. And parts of it, you know, is we've had such good yields that we really don't understand the value of potassium as it relates to nutrient efficiency in the plants and the ability to build the stock. Potassium and calcium, which we've got lots of calcium there in the soil and in our particular area, but potassium is the other thing that builds each cell wall. And so that calcium and boron, or calcium and potassium, are around, you know, and form the cell wall. And then you've got boron that helps with a structure, kind of like a framework inside each cell. So those three are very, very important for the plant's ability to be built. And then that is what actually assists the nitrogen to become very efficient in the plant.
So have we kind of ignored, I mean, the old adage was, you know, beans need potash, corn needs phosphorus. Have we changed our thinking a little bit in terms of just how important that potash is to the corn that we kind of ignored over the years?
Exactly. And I would say that from the standpoint that we understand a lot more about phosphorus and nitrogen and its impact on the environment as well as the corn crop and soybean crop. So we need nitrogen and phosphorus, but those can be more difficult to manage and keep out of our lakes and streams. And so we don't want to overapply those. We're bringing down the amounts that we're applying in nitrogen, phosphorus, and trying to hold those to be a little bit more on point, exactly what we need, and then use potassium, which does not affect the environment in a negative way, use it as a way, as a catalyst to really assist the crop production, whether it be corn, soybeans, wheat, alfalfa, cotton. All those crops are just tremendously responsive to potassium layers, and that allows us to deal with these weather swings from too wet to too dry, hot, cold. Potassium has a lot of ability in all those crops, both above ground and below ground.
And as we think about that, you know, I look at the agronomy book, and of course, you know, you have on phosphorus, you have various levels of MAPs in there, and then potash as well. How much does the soil supply, I mean, versus, say, phosphorus? Do we need to maybe look at a higher application of potash versus phosphorus?
Yeah, we do need to continue, in my opinion, to put more potassium on than we do phosphorus. And here's part of the reason why. Phosphorus and nitrogen are taken up by the plant, and in particular phosphorus, a little bit every day. So those plants, you know, from early stages, they eat just a little phosphorus every day that they grow, corn plants, soybean plants. And we have a little bit of a problem getting phosphorus to release early in the spring when it's cold. That's why we use phosphorus as a starter that you know, releases and gives our plants early stability. But potassium is one, typically in every plant's life, and in corn, it's from knee-high to tassel. It'll take up huge amounts of potassium, and that huge amount of potassium is really hard unless you've got excellent levels of potassium in your soil or apply some of potassium in a side dress or some kind of fashion. Same way with soybeans. From R1, first flower, which is about the 1st of July just before, through the next month and a half to or so, that's when it takes all of its potassium up. So we're in the middle of the potassium pull in soybeans right now.
Well, we'll get back to that in a second. Let's talk about right now, of course, the weather. We're blessed. We're not in droughty conditions by any means. But I'm understanding that that is certainly a breeding ground for some of the funguses, and I've even heard and seen on various news articles, southern rust in corn. As far as fungicide application, I know talking with some of the aerial applicators, we had all the foggy, rainy days kind of delayed them. Can we get too late to still be a benefit of putting on fungicides on corn?
So we can get too late. And we typically think about it as being once those silks turn brown and they're starting to move through and the kernels are starting to set, but that may be too late. And it's in particular, it's that when we planted that corn and how fast it's going to mature, each hybrid has a different maturity range as to how quick it's going to be quick dry down or if it's going to dry down slow. So those are parts of the answer to when you need to quit. But once we get into brown silk and we're really starting to fill hard on those kernels, we need to protect those upper leaves from the diseases. The top three leaves are where we get about 70% of our sunshine, and that's what the fungicides are all about. And now we're hitting that time of year where we're not only concerned about the rust and the gray leaf, which is really difficult and spreads really fast in these kind of humid environments, but we also have to contend with some of the newer diseases, the tar spot. And we did see some tar spot in the area just popping up. Well, that'll stay over on the residue. So tar spot, this is about the time of year when it'll start to show itself, and we need to be very vigilant on tar spot.
Are any of the fungicides beneficial to prevent tar spot?
Yes, so we do have a number of them that are new chemistries that are very good from about three manufacturers. The top, they tend to be the more expensive, but they are the ones that have about three modes of action on diseases, and those tend to be the ones that we need to focus on to really beat back the tar spot and protect it.
So if the silks have turned brown, in light of what you're just saying about these other potentials, could it not still be a benefit to apply that fungicide?
Oh, yeah, we'll still see. You know, I've done trials where I've gone out and I've put on an early pass of fungicide, come back at about that brown silk and put another pass. So, you know, maybe they'd be 3 weeks or a month apart, and I would still get 8-10 bushel on that second pass of fungicide on a corn crop. And this is one of those environments where we're going to quickly pull all that nutrition out of the stalks and push it into those ears. And it's a limitation of really having enough sunshine and leaf material to let that sunshine be captured. That's going to be the value of the fungicide in a year like this.
Well, certainly it would appear that we've had enough moisture, at least in most of this area, to get us into the grain fill period. I asked before going on the air, is there anything that worries you now as far as it could lead to greater tip back? Because what I've looked at, some of these ears look really, really long.
They really do, and they look excellent. We have a number of ears on plants around the edges, you know, which is a real indicator that those plants really feel strong. They feel like those mother plants are going to put on lots and lots of kernels. And what worries me is potassium levels. We have difficulty sometimes during that dry weather situation to take on potassium, and that really is an issue in corn development, because it'll be pulling all that until tassel time, and if it didn't build the plant with potassium, it's really hard for it to fill enough potassium later. Now we've got some moisture, at least we can pull some in maybe on a daily basis, but potassium is going to be one of those things that helps keep that nitrogen efficient, and as long as we've got good mineralization, the soil isn't too wet, you know, we don't have a field that's waterlogged, we will have the opportunity to get a lot of nitrogen, therefore that potassium will be of less need. So it scares me a little bit that potassium may be low during those dry couple of weeks before we got into the rains.
So I guess the other part of that really comes makes yield is kernel size. Are we set up to build big kernels as well?
So kernels size and the amount of yield and protein level are all really built around nitrogen and then the other players of the elements like chloride and potassium, phosphorus, sulfur, molybdenum. Those are all built to try and help make more nutrition available to that kernel, and that'll be where the protein, if you take a nitrogen test or a protein test, they are exactly the same thing. So if we can continue to keep these corn plants very green and healthy, we'll go ahead and get high yields and lots of protein in there, and that'll be filling those kernels.
Well, the other crop, of course, that now we're starting to actually realize how valuable it is, the soybean crop. I've had talked to people that say, oh, they don't think the bean crop looks as good. I'd have to say that a lot of beans I see look pretty good. What's your assessment on the bean crop?
So the bean crop looks pretty good. We're still low on sulfur, manganese, molybdenum, and a little bit of iron. That's the yellowing that you tend to see in certain fields. But we have a lot of potential out there. We're really going into the time period. We're at about midway through that potassium pull that we were talking about earlier. And that, as well as the ability of that soybean to manufacture nitrogen. It's manufacturing its own nitrogen. We obviously don't apply nitrogen to soybeans and because they use tremendous amounts. If we're looking at 100 bushel corn or soybean crop, we're looking at 4 to 450 pounds of N per acre that soybean has to produce. And so we have to have some oxygen or air down in the soil that the nitrosomus bacteria can kind of work with the soybean and put that into the plant. And then we also have to have those elements that I just talked about, sulfur, iron, moly, and to really be able to keep that plant and manganese to keep that plant active with those nodules.
Same question on beans as with corn. Again, I think the recommendation for a fungicide is just right close to an R3. Again, some of these early planted beans with the weather conditions may not have got the application on. Can it be too late to help the bean crop with a fungicide?
So in my experience, fungicides, if you put them on a little bit on the early side, say an R2 and an R3, you tend to give that soybean additional growth in vegetation. When you move it in a year like this where we got lots of moisture and we've got these ideal temperatures of 80 degrees during the day and 65 at night or 70 on a soybean crop, that actually will allow you, when you put it on at R4, it'll allow that plant to utilize that nutrition not for vegetative growth, but more to put the nutrition that it's building in its root system into the pods and into the seeds. So this could actually work out to be very, very positive, and we tend to have, with all this moisture, less insects, which is also a detriment to our soybean crop.
Yeah, I've been lucky not to see too many of the Japanese beetles, but for the bean crop, I mean, early planted beans, how long will we continue to bloom? And, we've got all of August yet. Can new blooms make good pods at this point?
Oh, yes. The last 4 or 5 years, as we get to the very top of the plants, we have been getting, with given some of the new techniques and the new varieties of beans, 4 and 5 and 6 pods. Every pod on a 120,000 plant stand of soybeans, every pod is worth 2 bushel the acre. So if you add on another a clump of 4 or 5 pods in the top axil or two, which we still haven't even achieved yet, we'll have tremendously bigger opportunity. So this is not the time to give up on a soybean crop. This is the time to really pay attention, watch what the weather's doing, and if you've got dry enough soils that we can go ahead and get those nitrogen moved through the plants and up into the beans, we'll have a really, really good opportunity.
Well, as I guess I'll ask your assessment. I'm kind of like a kid in a candy store sometimes, I guess, because what I have observed in both the corn and soybeans, I'm not sure which one has, if one more potential to be record yield than the other, but they look awfully good to me.
It looks really, really good to me. I think the balanced nutrition is playing its role in really maximizing yields this year, you know, paying attention to the other elements beyond nitrogen and phosphorus. And those are really playing a role in conjunction with early planting date. That's maximized our yield and in the past, and it just looks like those are have the biggest opportunity. We'll obviously have some data where we look at the planting date of the 1st of April all the way to the 1st of June in both of our research farms this year, and we'll really get a good idea, hindsight, what happened. But looking at it from the front side, those crops look very, very excellent to me.
Well, again, thank you for the time, and I look forward to when you get done with harvest and assemble all the information, because you've got some real intriguing, interesting work being done there at the research farm. I commend you on that, and look forward to seeing the results.
Yep. Well, I wanted to invite, if you missed our agronomy day here at Pleasant Plains and you have time and would like to make a little trip, we've got our Lexington plot tour tomorrow at 8 a.m. registration, 8:30 it starts, and we'll have a lot of the same type of dialogue up there for those growers to really assist them with their growth this rest of the year here.
And again, our thanks to Ed Corrigan, agronomist, technical agronomist with Brandt. So everything probably looks very good, and hopefully we can keep things going that way as well. With that, we wrap up this edition of Talking Agriculture with the experts from Brandt's.